Welcome to episode 19 of the podcast English for Life in the UK. This podcast is for intermediate level learners of English and is produced by a group of volunteer teachers from the St Augustine Centre in Halifax, Yorkshire, where we provide a range of support and advice to those in need, and in particular to asylum seekers, refugees and migrants. In normal times, we run a course at our centre, which is supported by this podcast. But we are now recording these podcasts from our homes as a result of the virus lockdown. And we do apologise for a slight reduction in the quality of the sound as a result. We believe that one of the most effective ways to learn any language is to listen to a range of native speakers talking about different subjects. We choose subjects we hope will be of interest and will help those who may want to become British citizens and will need to take a citizenship test. You can find links to other episodes and the transcripts of these episodes at our website, www.saintaugustinescentrehalifax.org.uk. Here you can also find more information about the centre, the support that's available, and for any of those of you who can afford it, how to make a donation to help to keep our work going in these difficult times. Today's episode is about health in the United Kingdom, the health service in particular, and it is brought to you by Christine, John and myself, Mark.
So, John, I think you would like to tell us a bit about the National Health Service. Am I right?
Yeah. Hi, Christine. Hi, Mark. Obviously, throughout the COVID crisis of recent months and in the elections of recent months, the NHS, the National Health Service, we refer to it as the NHS in everyday use, has been at the front of the news stories. It's been a very important part of the news over recent months. So just going to talk a little bit about the history, where the NHS came from and why it's such an important part of life in the UK. We're seeing VE Day this week, so we're celebrating the 75th anniversary of the end of World War II, and that takes us back to the birth of the National Health Service. Previous to World War II, health service was what we would describe as piecemeal. There was an insurance model of healthcare. So you might access healthcare through a charity, through an insurance scheme, or through a local authority. There wasn't one overarching health service in the UK until World War II. And during the war, after the Depression in the 1930s, a lot of unemployment, and then obviously World War II brought a lot of upheaval. People started to think about the future. Our politicians in the UK started to think about how we would order society after the war had finished and things that needed to change. And one of the most important things that they looked at was the provision of healthcare. Part of the planning for the NHS came about in what was called the Beveridge Report. So that was a Liberal politician called William Beveridge, and he was commissioned in 1943 to look at how we deal with things after the end of the war. So in 1943, we became quite clear that we were going to win the war. We were fighting alongside the Americans and the Soviet Union. So we turned our mind to planning how we were going to work things out in society after the war. And famously, there were five key things that the Beveridge Report was asked to examine. These were known as the five great evils. So these were want, squalor, idleness, ignorance, and disease. So these were five problems that were besetting society in Britain before the war and during the war, and five problems that we wanted to look to solve. So in terms of ignorance, we looked at education. Idleness meant putting men and women back to work. Squalor was looking at housing, better housing provision, and want was looking at things to do with the welfare state, so unemployment insurance, sick pay, things like that. The one that we're obviously looking at is disease. So part of the plan for this was to bring together all the health provision under a national health service. And the key, most important issue really for people accessing it was that previously this had been done through an insurance scheme. So you would have to pay a certain amount out of your wages each week into an insurance scheme, and then you'd be provided with healthcare. And the key change in the move to the NHS was that healthcare was paid for fully from taxation. And the other key point as well, that Anurin Bevin, who was the first health minister under the Labour government, wanted to impose, was to make it a universal. So it was a plan to universalise care and not just act as a safety net for poor people who couldn't afford healthcare. So it became what we know and love today, the National Health Service. And that was brought into being in 1948, a couple of years after the end of the war, by the post-war Labour government. And it retains the basic sense of being a national healthcare provider, free at the point of demand, free to everybody in the United Kingdom to this day.
John, you used the phrase universal healthcare. What does that mean?
It meant that the best healthcare was available to everybody. So universal means across the board, it means everybody. So it didn't matter whether you are rich or poor, you would be able, everybody would have access to the same level and the same quality of healthcare, no matter how much you earned. Everybody paid their national insurance into the system, and everybody received the same care under the NHS.
Yeah, so I'm going to talk a little bit about how the self-health service works today, how it works in practice. And it is a national service, but of course it's delivered locally. That is, it's at the local level where people experience it and where our listeners, you will need to know how it works for you. And I suppose the core of it is your local doctor, and we call them GPs. It stands for general practitioner, but you will hear people talk about their GP, and that is their doctor, their local doctor. And doctors are organised usually in practices. So there might be a single doctor, but in most cases these days, there's more than one doctor in a practice. And you have to register. So you register with a GP. And the GP, as it says, general practitioner, this doctor knows a lot about a wide range of things in terms of health. So he or she is not a specialist. They are a generalist about health. They have a good range of knowledge about all the things to do with people's health. You can get an appointment with your doctor. Very often these days that starts with a telephone call, but usually you can get to see your doctor, your GP, face to face, talk to them about the issues that you've got, and they can then refer you on to more specialist services. So you might go along and have some problems, let's say with back problems that you have, then your doctor might send you to a specialist who knows about spinal injuries or about back problems from there. So that's the GP service. Then, of course, there are hospitals, and the doctor might refer you to the hospital, but you can go along to the hospital yourself if you have an emergency. And I think Christine's going to talk us through a little bit more about what counts as an emergency. But hospitals will have an A and E, that is accident and emergency centre. And you can go there if what you've got is serious. The rest of the hospital is organised very much in specialist areas, and that is where they undertake operations. They undertake treatments of a more specialist kind, depending what your particular needs are. And most people who are in hospitals will have been referred there from their doctor, from their GP. But as I say, you could go there if you have an emergency yourself. And if they keep you in, then they would move you into a part of the hospital that deals with your particular problem. These days as well, you can get a lot of information about health through the internet, and some of that is reliable and some of it isn't, and we would strongly recommend that you use the NHS's own website. So they have something called 111 NHS, which is both a phone number, so you can dial 111, or you can go on a website and put in 111.nhs.uk, and it will come up with a whole series of questions and menus that you can follow to get advice over the internet or over the phone from people within the health service. I suppose the other thing to say would be that there are other kinds of services which are all part of the health service. There are mental health services for those people who have particular issues around, for example, anxiety or depression. Then there are dentists who specialise in obviously looking after your teeth and doing things for your teeth and your gums and your mouth. Some dentists are private, but some dentists also work through the National Health Service. Then another important thing I think to know about are pharmacies or chemists. You will see them all over the place. In most shopping centres, most high streets will have a pharmacy or a chemist. And in there, there are people who are trained specialists who can give you advice and help you with medication, with what you might need for what your particular circumstances are. So pharmacies are an important part of the system here as well. And then the final one I thought I'd mention is opticians. If you have eye problems, if your eyesight isn't good enough, if you need glasses or you think you might need glasses, then you can go to an optician. And some of those services are available free, but some of them you also have to pay for. So I hope that gives you an idea broadly of what the system looks like from a local level. And I think, Christine, you're going to kind of explore some of the options that people might have.
Yes, I will, Mark. Thank you. But I want, first of all, to say something about, just to emphasise what you've already said. It is free of charge. You mentioned this as well. All this healthcare is free of charge at source. However, you need to be able to prove that you are eligible for free healthcare in order to not pay anything. And for some people, particularly for people from other countries, you need to do that. For asylum seekers, refugees, and for people on low wages, there's a form called HC2, which you need to get, which will just show that you're entitled to free medical treatment. And you can show that to your doctor, you can show that in the hospital, and you can show it in the pharmacy when you're getting any medicine. And you need to apply for that using a form called HC1. They're quite long forms, but they are straightforward. But I recommend that anybody in this country who has not got evidence that they're entitled to free treatment applies for an HC2 as soon as possible. We at St. Augustine's, if you're local, if you're in the Halifax area, we can help you with that. If you do get treatment and you haven't got an HC2 and you have to spend your own money, then keep all the receipts. And when your HC2 eventually comes through, that can be refunded, the money you've spent already. Another thing you mentioned, Mark, is how that it's important to register with the GP. And there are lots of different GP practices in the country, and they all have different ways of working. But almost all of them require people to register first, and then they spend a few days, or perhaps even a few weeks, recording you on that system, on their internal systems. And until they've done that, you can't see a GP. So again, I encourage any listeners to register with the GP now when you're healthy. So if and when the moment comes that you need to see a doctor, you are already registered so you can make an appointment. And you're right. Generally, what you need to do is to phone up and speak to a receptionist and ask to make an appointment to see a doctor. That receptionist will often ask you what is the problem, and they will then suggest that perhaps instead of seeing a doctor, the doctor might phone you back to talk to you. So that a doctor's call, a phone call, is quite common now. So you've covered a lot of things here, Mark, but I think I'll just try to put them in some order, you know, what to do if you get ill. And I mean, the first thing to do is, if you have a minor illness of some sort, is to treat yourself. Most of us do that, you know, and it's easy to do, especially if you have things at home to help you. So, Mark, you mentioned the pharmacy and as being a good source of advice, and you're right, it is, as long as you speak to the pharmacist. So when you go in, you can just ask at the counter, ask anybody, and say, "I'd like to speak to the pharmacist, please." And they will help you. And often, if it's a good place, they will take you quietly to a place where other people can't hear your conversation, and they can give you good advice. You mentioned NHS 111 as being a good source of advice as well. They will ask you a lot of questions and recommend you either see your GP or perhaps that you go to A&E. So the NHS 111, you can either contact them by ringing 111, or you can find them online, NHS 111. And when you ring them, if you don't speak English very well, they will provide an interpreter. So when they answer the phone call, and that might take some time, particularly at the moment, but when they eventually answer your phone call, if you say, "I need an interpreter, please," and tell them the language that you need, that you speak, your first language, and they will, they will try to get an interpreter to come onto the phone call. Again, you will need to wait, but they should be able to do that. In some areas, we don't in Halifax, but in some parts of the country, in fact, I think in most parts of the country, as well as GPs, surgery, you know, the doctor's place, and A&E, which you mentioned, Mark, they have things called urgent treatment centres, or sometimes minor injury centres. And they're places which are open 7 days a week, And you can walk in if you have a problem. As I say, we don't have them in Halifax, but that's a good place to go if you've got a major problem, not life-threatening. If you have any problem, any medical problem that threatens your life, for example, if somebody becomes unconscious, or if they suddenly lose a whole lot of blood, or if they're choking, or have severe chest pain, or serious burns, or if they have a stroke or persistent fits, those are life-threatening emergencies. And in that case, what you should do is ring on your phone, ring 999. When you ring, you will be asked, which emergency service do you require? That means, who are you asking for? And they might tell you, it can be fire, police, ambulance, Coast Guard, all sorts of things. And so you would say, ambulance. And then when you get through to the health people, the ambulance service, there are four questions you'll be asked. They'll say, is the patient, the person who's ill, are they breathing? Then they'll ask, what address are you calling from? And then what number are you calling from? What telephone number? And only after that, they will say, what is the reason for your call? So when you ring 999, you need to have a clear enough head to have your address and your phone number and an understand, a way of saying what the reason for the call is. But they will ask more questions after that, and then they might well ask an ambulance to come to you with paramedics. They're trained people who can either treat the patient there or will take the person into hospital, into the A and E part of the hospital.
Christine, you talked about somebody being taken to A and E if they phone and an ambulance came. Am I right that you could also go to A and E yourself if you're well
Yes,
enough to
you're
do
quite
that?
right, Mark. That's an important point. You can do that. It's important not to go to A&E for very minor problems. The A&E is only for what it says, accident and emergency. So broken bones or major problems. But you can go there by yourself if you've got the means to do that. You don't have to wait for the ambulance. It's quite a complicated subject, and we're going over this quite quickly. Where could people find out more if they were interested?
I used the Open Learn website, which is part of the Open University, and there's a course that you could, there's some free courses on there. And one of them is covering the history of the establishment of the welfare state and the National Health Service. And the course is called A Beveridge Vision. And that is on the Open Learn section of the Open University website for anybody who's interested in finding out more about the history of the NHS.
That's great, John. And I think I would emphasize, we've said it already, but the NHS's own website is very good and does have a lot of information on it. So people who want to know the practicalities of how to use the health service today, that would be the main source of information. And as Christine said, for those of you who are local, then we would be able to help you at the St Augustine Centre to signpost you to where would be most useful for you to go.
Language support in this part of the podcast.
I choose a few of the more difficult words and phrases from the podcast and help people to make sure they understand them. Today I've chosen a number of phrases, all of which relate to the subject of health, which we have been talking about. I'm going to start when early on I said that a doctor would refer you on. Now, to refer normally means to mention, to have to do with something. But in this case, to refer on means to send or direct somebody for treatment. So the doctor would refer you on to a specialist or a hospital where you can get more treatment. Christine talked about being eligible for free healthcare. Eligible just means allowed, qualified for. You will be able to get free healthcare. Later we referred to the surgery, the doctor's surgery, and this is simply the place where the doctor works, where he or she sees their patients. Christine referred to one of the serious things that could happen to you is that you could become unconscious. Unconscious. Now, to be conscious is to be aware of things, to know what's going on. When you are unconscious, normally you have collapsed. You can't hear or speak or see anything. It's as if you're asleep or dead, but you're neither of those. You've collapsed and you simply are not aware of what's going on. And that's a serious health condition. We also used the word patient a few times in this episode. This word can have at least two meanings. You can talk about a person being a patient. That means that they are easygoing, prepared to wait, tolerant. But in this case, a patient is a person who is ill and is being treated by a doctor or a hospital. So the person is described as being a patient of the doctor. And finally, I talked about the centre signposting people to where they can get further help. Now, a signpost can be a physical sign in the road or at the side of the road which shows you where to go. That's a signpost. But in this case, we're saying that a person can give information about where to go to somebody else and they will be signposting that person to where to go. That's it for today's episode. We hope you found it useful. Don't forget, you can find the transcripts for all our episodes on our website, www.saintaugustinecentrehalifax.org.uk. And we recommend that you first listen to the podcast without the transcript, and then you listen to it again following it in the transcript. Once again, thank you very much for listening, and we look forward to joining you again next week.